Hello, friends. I'm trying to get in one more little program before it will be too late to continue working on this. We have finished program 17, Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle, video commentary, and we went up to page 46, so we will now be beginning on 46, and this will be program number 18. I'm doing my best to keep the throat and the voice in a reasonable condition so it doesn't sound like one of those days that I pushed ahead with no voice at all. We're going to be dealing with the agents that impress humanity. Now we have in the previous program it was all about impressing the new group of it was all about impressing the hierarchy. First comes the impression of Shambhala by very high lives, and then comes the impression of hierarchy, and that we have dealt with. DK tells us in a little what I'll use as a segue, the entire evolutionary history of our planet is one of reception and of distribution, of a taking in and of a giving out. And then this very important statement: the key to humanity's trouble, focusing as it has in the economic troubles of the past 200 years, that's the third ray, and in the theological impasse of the Orthodox churches, that is the sixth ray. So please note that these two rays, which in combination can cause a lot of difficulty, are brought together in what is being called here trouble and an impasse. And DK then goes on and says, the key, and I'll skip, has been to take and not to give, to accept and not to share, to grasp and not to distribute. Just pause for a moment and think of the human beings that do this. They care for their own lower personality, for their own, in psychology we usually call it the lower ego. They care for what is in their hands, and they do not share. They, and in a larger sense, they do not care about those with whom they should share. We see this in the quite amazing battle that is now occurring between the autocrats and the people who believe in the democracy or the democratic way. That has nothing to do particularly with the Democratic Party, although they, in the United States at least, they do seem to represent that sharing state of mind and a broader care for the welfare of those who are not like themselves in terms of culture and racial coloring and so forth. Well, DK says that if you take and do not give, if you accept and do not share, if you grasp and do not distribute, then this is the breaking of the law, which has placed humanity in the position of guilt. And we might say that when there is guilt of this kind, it has to be expiated. It has to be worked through. We cannot go looking for a savior to take upon him as the old scapegoat all of our guilt and drive the scapegoat into the wilderness. No, that is a naive position. We have to correct that which has placed us, or humanity, in the position of guilt. And then he says of the war, and by that I think he means particularly World War II, but he could mean also the greater war, which is a combination of World War I and World War II, beginning in 1914 and ending, in one sense at least, in 1945. The war is the dire penalty which humanity has had to pay for this great sin of separateness. May I interpolate the that's considered to be the one great heresy, or the greatest of the heresies. Here's what has happened. And DK tells us, impressions from the hierarchy have been received, distorted, misapplied, and misinterpreted. And the task of the new group of world servers is to offset this evil. But so obviously DK is saying that to distort what has been received, to misapply it and misinterpret it, is an evil. So there's analogies here that these servers are to humanity what the Buddhas of activity are to Shambhala. They certainly, in each case, do support the structure. And what the near Mauna Kea are to the hierarchy. Well, I've gone through this. And now we, well, you know, every time you read it, it seems to have something new. And the different aspects of divinity are here represented. The will, the love, as you see, and the active intelligence of God. So that took us to the end of Program 17. In this video commentary, it took us to the 31st, and now we're on the 1st of November, and it is Program 18, and we're going to see what happens if we look at the science of impression, and it is carried down to the level of human consciousness. We've seen, or at least been informed of, the groups that impress Shambhala, that impress hierarchy, and now we have humanity. It's going to be a lot closer to home, and we may recognize the impressors more readily than near Mauna Kea's and Assyrian influences and constellational influences and so forth. So who is it? And maybe this will come as no surprise. Who is it that impresses humanity? And the first thing we see is the hierarchy through the stimulating of ideas. Now, may I interpolate that hierarchy lives within the spiritual triad where ideas, not just thoughts, but ideas can be found. So, when ideas are brought down and offered to humanity and impressed consciously or unconsciously in terms of the receiving humanity, they demonstrate as a steadily growing and enlightened public opinion. Now we are sorely in need of this enlightened public opinion. Right now, the counterforce is doing a lot of surreptitious impressing upon a great percentage of humanity that is still subject to selfishness. And the results could be devastating and ruinous two hierarchies experiment with democracy. Because there are always those who want power over love, and they'll do anything to acquire that power, even though they have to violate the law of love. So humanity is impressed by the hierarchy through the stimulation or through the stimulating of ideas. Now, whether all human beings will truly receive ideas in their pure form, they can receive some kind of mental formulation, moving from vague to more concrete and clear. And that, at least, is something. When I looked at the, we've all been looking at it, the January 6th, 2021, insurrection with the attempt to take over the Congress and the Senate and to do many things of an unholy nature. I realized that the people who were the worst perpetrators were not at all stimulated by ideas. They had a certain unconscious drives which they were attempting to fulfill, which, when coupled with misinterpretation or illusion, made for a very violent, thoughtless combination. But let's just say that as we move along, a more enlightened public opinion will emerge, would emerge. And that even takes the form of more enlightened thought, not just, let's say, Buddhic, atomic, monadic, etc., ideas. All right, who else or what else impresses humanity? The influence of the ashrams of the masters as they affect the aspirants in of the world, the humanitarians and the idealists. Well, of course, these aspirants and humanitarians and idealists are, shall we say, human beings. And through these higher types of human beings, the more average type of human being, who is basically looking for safety and the fulfillment of desire, these people are led into a safer and more plan aligned condition. The next sentence from the Tibetan is important. And let's realize that just the way every impressing agent or point of tension is higher than the recipient that it impresses. I mean, just take a look at those ones impressing Shambhala and even the hierarchy. They are very high, higher than either Shambhala or the hierarchy. So it is here. I suppose it's going to be ashrams. The ashrams are somehow in their thought, in their objectives, much higher than the human beings who are impressed. So let's look at this, as the Tibetan says, these impressing agencies, being seven in number, may I interpolate, because there are seven major ray ashrams, okay, being seven in number, and now going on with the Tibetan, constitute seven different streams of impressing energy which affect the seven ray types. Well, sometimes it's difficult to know which are the more important when it comes to the development of humanity. The astrological effects, which pertain generically to the third ray, or the ray effects, which pertain particularly to the second ray. What I've gathered from all this is because we're in a second ray solar system, and our solar logos has a second ray soul, that it is the system of impressing agents, namely the rays, which are of greater importance than, of course, augmented by the rays coming through planets and different signs or constellations. Okay, so going on with the Tibetan, the united ashrams forming the great ashram of the Christ. We must remember that the many, the seven, form the great ashram of which the Christ is the head, and Sanat Kumara is even more of a supreme head of the entire hierarchy. And to him, the Christ looks, when addressing his Father in heaven. So, the united ashrams, forming the great ashram of the Christ, affect humanity as a whole. This great, it's like hierarchy as a whole, affects humanity as a whole. That is something to really bear in mind. There may be negative effects that are occurring as those who are upon the left-hand path and who follow the Lords of the Dark Face, I guess, is a name that used to be called in Atlantis, as opposed to the Lords of the Shining Countenance, and this has nothing to do with the color of your skin, it has to do with the radiation that you give forth. So the united ashrams affect humanity as a whole. And that's why the reappearance of the Christ and the externalization of the hierarchy is so very important at this time when the danger is critical that humanity could so mishandle the present situation that a new and incipient beginning type of humanity would have to be brought forward. And to see whether the kind of humanity that is needed by the divine plan could not be developed. Anyway, these united ashrams, as forming the great ashram of the Christ, work solely. Now, think of that word. Solely through the new group of world servers, whose members are on all rays, of all grades of development. Now, does he really mean all? Because sometimes he really emphasizes the second degree as a necessity. So, but anyway, what he's saying here is that the great united ashram works solely through the new group of world servers, whose members are on all the rays, of all grades of development. Well, if he uses the idea of the new group of world servers in a looser form than he sometimes does, then he can say that. And, says the Tibetan, who work in all the various departments of human living and enterprise. So it's trying to give, this text is trying to give an idea of the importance of the new group of world servers to the hierarchy, and the breadth of the new group of world servers. Now, members of the new group of world servers were said to, or advised to, look out for those who were taking the first initiation, or had taken it, or were even taking the second initiation. So it implies, at least in some references, a status for members of the new group of world servers, a status requiring the second degree. But sometimes, I guess, he looks at those who can be part of it, and it seems like he includes the men and women of goodwill. These men and women of goodwill may not even have taken the first initiation. So keep in mind his use of words, and whether he's speaking strictly or speaking in a manner that is more loose. Okay. So what do we have so far? Impression of humanity by the hierarchy, and impression of aspects of humanity by the influence of the masters. And now we get to point number C. And he tells us that the activity of the new group of world servers, about which I have already written in my various pamphlets, therefore repetition is not necessary. And I suppose if you go to the end of page 46 in the book Telepathy, you'll find out where this can be accessed. And where can it be accessed? Right here. Yeah, he tells us that there's 130 pages, apparently, in a treatise on the Seven Rays, Volume 2, that pertain to the new group of world servers, and in the White Magic book, another 35 pages. So he has already written extensively on the subject. And we have to honor that Okay, so the activity of the new group of world servers is the third and least powerful but utterly necessary group of agents which impress humanity. So the hierarchy as a whole, the influence of the ashrams, seven of them, and then the activity of the new group of world servers, who are themselves impressed solely, it says, by the members of hierarchy. Okay. Now, you know, we still are on page 46. We haven't made a lot of page progress, but okay, we're going along. And DK says, "It will be obvious to you that I have only touched upon a few, a very few, of the impressing forces of the planet, and have enumerated only a few of the major groups, which are in their intrinsic nature both recipients of impression and agents later of the impressing agent. So when you are a receiver and are being impressed by an impressing agent, your attempt to impress those lower vibratorily than you is a continuation of the forces and energies which impressed you. So let's just say, how can we look at this? The hierarchy impresses humanity, but humanity or the new group of world servers. And when the new group of world servers impresses certain members of the human race, because hierarchy has impressed them particularly, and the new group of world servers carries on that impression, then the agents which impressed the servers continue to work through the receivers that the new group of world servers seek to impress. Well, like DK said, it's all, the whole history of humanity is one of reception, well, impressing, reception, and distribution. We are working in a way on the supreme science of contact. We're working also on the science of impression, and more specifically, we find telepathy to be a special function within the science of impression and within the supreme science of contact, but he hasn't yet said too much about that. When we arrive at the human family, the reciprocal activity is blocked by human selfishness. It is this, DSK is saying this, it is this interruption of impression and this interference with the divine circulatory flow, which, as I have said above, is responsible for sin, for disease, and for the various factors which make humanity what it is today. Anyway, this blocking of what humanity might otherwise be able to do because of its own selfishness. So I'm not sure there's any particular color which is best. One of our course directors and teachers has given me the information about how to access more colors. I just haven't been able to do it quite yet. So it is this interruption of impression which cuts short the divine circulatory flow. That's quite a formulation of words. Divine circulatory flow. It bespeaks the smoothness with which energy is supposed to flow, and the kind of direction that it should take. If it were not captured or thwarted or bottled up, shall we say, by human selfishness. So DK goes on to say that when the free flow of divine energy, of divine interplay, and of spiritual purpose is re-established, now, may I interpolate it, it must mean that it once was established, and the forces of restoration have now to be at work to reestablish the divine plan, which was once perhaps in a more healthy condition than at present. So, you know, following DK here, that when the free flow of divine energy, of divine interplay, and of spiritual purpose is reestablished, then evil will disappear, and the will to good will become factual goodwill upon the outer physical plane. So you can see that we are really dealing with something that is crucial for the welfare of humanity. Then evil will disappear, and the will to good, which is the great archetype of goodwill, will descend to become factual goodwill upon the outer physical plane. But, you know, when you think of a man or a woman of good will, well, maybe we have not thought that so much is really behind that expression of goodwill. Every time we do our triangles work we use the energy of goodwill, which is love in action, we may not realize the potencies that are behind that work. So basically, what we have here is the idea we must not interfere with or disrupt the divine circulatory flow, or there really will be poisoning all the springs of life, cause disease, and lead to disaster and delay. That's taken from the 15 Councils in White Magic, which begin on page 473. So, humanity is in a state of crisis. And the lodge which intends towards evil realizes that it does not have all that long remaining in which to pervert humanity. So successful has been the work of the Christ. That divine interplay we're talking about here is a back and forth between the impressing agent and the receiver. And all of this somehow is done under the impression of the will, or the will to good. And it results in a number of different salutary outcomes, beneficial outcomes, healthy outcomes. Okay, now DK goes on and he says the following. In the statements given above, in connection with the three great planetary centers, you have the basis for the new and coming approach to divinity, which will be known under the expression invocative and evocative religion. Well, what we've just studied is the very high impressing agents of the members of the council at Shambhala, the agents including Shambhala and the Nirmanakayas, which impress hierarchy, and how hierarchy, following the divine will, impresses humanity with the emergence of many beneficial outcomes. I suppose we could ask, you know, do I have the feeling of being impressed? Or the feeling, well, the sense, well, the experience, perhaps, of being impressed. Who or what is impressing me? And how do I know that? And what is the registration of that impression really like? Now, these are important questions to anyone who develops that necessary sensitivity, which is required in all this telepathic and impressing work. Okay. So, telepathy, the new science of impression, and the supreme science of contact. That's what we seem to be dealing with in this section. DK goes on to say, it is this new science, by science I suppose it means it has its own inviolable methodology. If you conform to the methodology, it works. Otherwise, it doesn't, because it's based upon factual knowledge. So in this new science of impression, which forms the subjective basis and the uniting element which binds together the entire realm of knowledge of science and religion. It is this science of impression which does that. Kind of reminds one of the triple effect of the banner of peace in Agni Yoga. I think we have science, religion, philosophy. I may be wrong about what those three balls in the center of the Agni Yoga flag really represent, but not too far off. We can look that up, of course. But we're binding together realms of knowledge which oftentimes fight with each other. The sixth ray narrow religious impulse has fought with science, and the broader types of religion have fought with the narrow types of religion. And of course, the poor seventh ray, which is the ray of magic, has received a bad report from the scientists and from the religionists. In other words, this is the way the sixth ray and the fifth ray have worked against the seventh ray. There are these unexpected, or if you study carefully, they will be expected, lines of relationship between different methods and different rays and different points of tension. And you will begin to recognize the lines of connection between them, among them. and how those lines of connection are stratified, and how they are particularly active at certain times, which are cyclically indicated. Now, going on with TK, the fundamental ideas which underlie these great areas of human thought all emanate from intuitional levels. I suppose we have the pure reason of the intuitive plane and, well, the discovery of the one who wears the garment of God, when the integration formula says, know me, not just the garment I wear, and the truer religion, all can arise from intuitional levels. So, the great areas of human thought, pretty well described by the seven tendencies of the seven ashrams, but here DK defines them as three: the entire realm of knowledge, of science, and of religion. Yeah, I want to make that just a little more related to intuition. Anyway, these fundamental ideas, they have to come from, in a way, no lower than the Buddhic plane, if they are to be true ideas. So there is divine vision, is that it? We have a response to the four sounds, and we have some kind of service, and then number five, from above, divine vision. Yes, a lot about healing is found on subplane number six, counting from above. Now, what about these fundamental ideas emanating at first from intuitional levels, even though they may be well described in the abstract mind and concretized even more so in the concrete mind? They finally condition human consciousness, says the Tibetan, evoking man's aspiration to penetrate deeper into the arcana of all wisdom, for which knowledge is the preparatory stage. Note these fundamental ideas really are fundamental. They finally condition the human consciousness. And the result, no matter how they reach the members of the new group of world servers or average man, is to evoke the aspiration to penetrate deeply into the true occult, esoteric, i.e. arcana, the arcane causes of things, for which knowledge is the preparatory stage. So, let's look at that. And we are very fortunate that at this time the approach of the hierarchy makes possible this deeper penetration into the true sources of wisdom. Now we're dealing here, the Tibetan is, quite a bit with the signs of impression. He's no longer being quite so specific as discussing, discussing telepathy. And basically, because this is so long, I'm certainly not going to finish it tonight. But then we'll come, you know, what we've been waiting for in a way, this supreme science of contact. And right now, that's on page 52, and we are up here on page 47. Yeah. And we'll at least make our way into 48. So the middle condition is the science of impression, as part of the supreme science of contact. So this science of impression is the mode of life of the subjective world. Now, subjective, notice, not just subtle, but subjective. The mode of life of the subjective world, which lies between the world of external happenings, which is, as he says, the world of appearances and of exoteric manifestation, and the inner world of reality. Well, we have objectivity, subtlety, subjectivity, and true reality, which is at a point, exists at a point beyond subjectivity. The mode of life of the masters themselves, as they focus their consciousness within the spiritual triad, for the most part, some few making their way through the ascension to the monadic plane and the logoic plane, such as the Christ has done, such as the Buddha has done. I mean, if you think about the Buddha, having had a cosmic touch and basically touching an aspect of the cosmic mental plane, you suspect that surely he has gone beyond mere telepathy, and that the science of impression is utilized by him. And that he is somehow an expert in the phase of the supreme what's it called? The supreme science of contact, that's what it's called. That he is an expert there. And that he uses, of course, that kind of knowledge, which makes him already a resident of Shambhala at important cyclic events taking place on the earth. Okay. Now what else? Yes. So DK places the science of impression between the world of externalities, appearances, exoteric manifestations, and the inner world of reality, which transcends what we normally call subjectivity. But from another point of view, subjectivity rises through point of tension after point of tension. And there are just ever so many, when we start thinking of galactic structure and galactic assemblages and families of galaxies and those kinds of things, which of course are beyond any ken that we can really have, except to maybe speculate that we know they exist. So the science of impression does have a kind of a triadal midway position. Now he says, DK goes on to say, this is a point which should be most carefully taken into the calculations of the occult investigators. Impressions are received and registered. They form the basis of reflection for those aspirants who are sensitive enough to their impact and wise enough to record carefully in consciousness their emanating source. So we're still somehow dealing a bit here with impressions upon humanity. These impressions upon humanity form the basis of reflection for the, well, for those aspirants who are sensitive enough to their impact and wise enough, well, to record them carefully so that there is some degree of precision regarding what the impression really brought. And I'll make this just a little bigger. So then what do we do with those impressions after due practice? This period of brooding upon the registered impression is followed by another period wherein the impression begins to take the form of an idea. Now, is he using that word in a loose sense, meaning a thought or a true idea? And from that point, it follows the familiar course of translation from an idea into a presented ideal. It then comes under the invocative appeal of the more concrete-minded until it finally precipitates into outer manifestation and takes form. Well, we see it's not an instantaneous process. There is due practice. There is brooding upon the impression, and there is what you might call condensation. The impression begins to take form as an idea. We might say begins to condense into, well, a true idea, or is it really a high thought? From that point, it follows the familiar course of translation from an idea, or maybe we have to say a powerful thought, into a presented ideal. It becomes further condensed, further isolated, we might say, and it then comes under the invocative appeal, says the Tibetan, of the more concrete-minded, until it finally precipitates into the outer manifestation and takes form. So, from the world of reality and through the science of impression and through the condensation of those impressions into powerful thoughts and the powerful thoughts or loosely ideas begin to condense even more among the concrete-minded, and they work upon it until what began as reality and the science of impression works itself out onto the dense physical plane, which after all is necessary if we're going to work with the divine plan. So, DK says something new now. He says, "You will see, therefore, that what I am doing is to take the student a step further into the world of reception and perception and point him to the more subtle contacts." Now, that doesn't mean the subtle body necessarily. See, we have to be careful about the words. But more subtle contacts which lie behind those concepts and are definitely regarded as definitely nebulous, and to which we give the name intuitions, which emanate really from the Buddhic plane. So everything that is going to precipitate into the outer world begins on the intuitive plane or higher. He wants to take the student a step further and point him to the more subtle contacts which lie behind those concepts which are regarded as definitely nebulous, and which at first, before they really begin to condense into abstract thoughts and concrete thoughts, remain in this nebulous condition. You kind of brood upon them. You know that something has, as it were, struck your consciousness. But what was it? What was its import? What did it have, really, to say? And gradually, clarity ensues. Now we have a lot more, which I'm not going to get into tonight, both for your sanity and mine and my health. Yes, it's a whole nother program. One can see that. So, and we've gone as far as page 48, I guess. Yeah. We've gone as far as page 48. So, and we'll say this goes to 48, what we've been doing. Program number 18. And as long as I don't get my numbers all messed up, I will be guided by the communications team, who seem to preserve greater objectivity about numbering than I do. So anyway, this was the end of 18. And basically, it went from 46 to 48. I certainly am hoping that I am, looks like I'm giving you the right, right visual. And this occurred largely on the 1st of November. And we will be beginning program 19 in telepathy and the etheric vehicle. And probably, well, the safe way is to just say XX. And we will see. It will be beginning from page 48. So, friends, that ought to be enough for a relatively short program. I don't have time or strength right now to move beyond that. But some, you know, some of you are making a quite a systematic study of this. I hope that in my interpretations of what Master DK is saying and the links that I kind of provide, that you will gain additional light. That is my hope. And I also, there's so many things to check. I also keep hoping, is my microphone on? Is my photo running into the text, or is it not? And so forth. So, we all on the communications team, it's an important function these days. Tui and I are part of that, of course, and BL and Joe and Michael Crow and Michael Stacy and other people who help us around conference time. They are attending now and then. We wish you as complete and useful an absorption of the material presented as may be possible to you, and possible under these circumstances. At different times of the day, the voice, which disappeared suddenly because of injudicious use of a strong medicine, seems to be returning. I have to, you know, really hope that that is the case. I'm learning a lot about the voice that I once knew when I was a teacher of singing long ago, and of choir. I'm learning, relearning some of those things. One thing I did learn at the National Music Camp, where I spent 6 years, never have a cold milkshake before a choir concert. It's lethal. Anyway, reaching you the best I can. And Tuya does the same, and all of our helpers on the team, they are there oftentimes assisting. So here we go, and thank you for being here if you get this far, okay? Talk to you soon. Stop the recording now.